Hello, and welcome to the Know-It-All Guide to PC File Elimination. My name is Martin Tuip. I'm a Senior Technical Product Marketing Manager at Iron Mountain, and I'm a 10-time Microsoft Exchange MVP. What the MVP status is that my peers have nominated me each year for my willingness to share my knowledge and experience on Microsoft Exchange and related technologies with the general wider community there. I truly enjoy sharing my experiences, and also throughout the webinar I kind of hope that I'm be able to make people and train people, or actually give people some knowledge that allows them to in this case PhD files to finalize their project they're working on. Also, I've got about a decade worth of archiving experience. I've been in this space quite a bit. I've, deployed products, archived products, designed products. And throughout this decade, I've really, gained some insight on how people are using this kind of technology to solve their needs. So the agenda for today is kind of talking about how do we get to the problem, where originated the problem for, identifying some of the challenges that there are there around managing PhD files, and also giving you tips, some things you can use to bring back PhD files, bring them back under control, back under management. So, where did the problem really start? Well, in an ideal world, if you're looking at, managing information, is that, executives would set up a policy, they set a policy, they figure it out, this is what our policy is going to be, it's like, hey, this is how we manage our information, and IT basically has been handed this policy, implements it, sets specific rules, specific quota limits, or specific guidelines, and all end users do as they are told. Like, you're not keeping email long, once you hit your mailbox limit, you start to delete stuff. And this is the ideal situation. In my, experience, though, being working with Exchange for 15 years almost, is that you can't train end users. They're not going to change their habits. They're not going to delete stuff because it's their opinion is that it is their data. They need that data to do their job. And PhD files in such are a shell game. They what you think is that the data is away. However, end users think because it's their data, they just move it to another repository. And then, how do we get there? Well, problem is that, you have this functionality in Outlook that says, well, we're going to auto-archive the content. And what happens is that, after 2 weeks, all of a sudden you get this pop-up saying, like, hey, you want to archive some content, you want to move stuff automatically to your PC. And that's not, where all of a sudden end users not realizing that they have a problem, they actually, having a PhD file on their local machine, which in result, they have content somewhere, but they never really thought about, moving that content into an archive or in a PhD file. So, the content of mailbox is really, where is it at? You have some of the content in your databases, which is ideally where all the content should belong. Then you have some content in those databases in the mailboxes. Active Directory contains some information, as far as names, contact, email addresses, distribution lists. But as far as a lot of the data, even though it is a copy, is actually attached to in the client itself, whether you have a PhD file or an OST file or other methods of replicated information, whether that is on a mobile phone or PDA or things like that. So there's a lot of content out there in your environment that you not necessarily have thought about, and especially PhD files here, because it's not related to anything you centrally manage, is where a lot of data resides. So a typical Outlook configuration would be where you were using cache mode, which creates what's called an OST file. You have a file that synchronizes with your production memory, your mailbox that's in the Exchange server. And the reason why you have it is because you get better perceived performance on desktops. You get replicating content that is seamless, even though you might not be connected to the network, you still have access to your mailbox there. For an old mailbox data, for old email data, you actually store the content most of the time. Most users would do it, store it in a PST file, which is, for an end user, a way to give them extra email storage, even in case you have mailbox limits. And the PST files generally either stored locally or on network shares, even though network share stored PST files are not supported by Microsoft because it can create significant problems, as far as corruption, data loss. They might have personal copies of PST files just in case, have a copy of the file on an external drive. And when the content is in a PST file, there are technically no storage limitations because they can create as many files they want and create as much as they want, how large they ever want to get them. And nobody can delete stuff anymore, so you really don't have and can't set retention policies on that content. Once it's there, the end user really decides when that content needs to be, can be deleted. So a little bit on history is that PST files, in case you didn't know, is that PST files are what's called the Microsoft Outlook personal store file. And a PST file is created and managed by the user in Outlook. Technically, there's two versions for those that are long enough, know that there is the regular version, and then we got the Unicode version, which came with Office 2003. The older version actually had a hard-coded limit of 2 gigabytes, and when you went over that, it actually corrupted the file. The newer file, the Unicode file, allows you to theoretically go to 32 terabytes. So why did PST files become so popular? Well, first of all, they're easy to use, right? Anybody who uses email can create a PST file. People use them to get access to their content when they're traveling. And also, a lot of them were created simply because of storage mailbox limits. Quotas were enforced, and users didn't want to delete the content and move the content to a PST file. Now, it's my opinion, and we're starting to see that a lot as well, is that enforcing quotas, you're putting strict mailbox limits, even though if you have them, and even though, you might have them in good faith, they are counterproductive. It's not really the way to manage your information anymore. Because what happens is that it forces users to do what's called underground archiving. In essence, create other repositories where they can store the information because they think they need it, and they think they actually, they will use that information to do their daily duties. Now, stubbing, as far as storage management to do stubbing and basically removing the content, leaving a placeholder in place with an archiving product, can create significant performance issues because the performance of your mailbox store is not related to size, but related to the amount of items in a mailbox. And Microsoft actually recommends not using a stubbing technology there. You can use it, but use it in moderation in essence there. Problems really are once you have PST files is that there is no centralized management. All of a sudden, it's now in the hand of the end user. User control the creation and location of PST files. Its growth really goes unchecked. And, one of the organizations I worked with in the past, when they did an initial investigation, they thought it had about 5 terabytes of PST files. And this is a fairly substantial organization with about 50,000 users. But a closer investigation of basically entire infrastructure revealed that they had about 300 terabytes of PST files. The problem then, what you also have with a lot of files, is PST files are, you can get a lot of data loss, a lot of corruption, infrastructure cost because they have a lot of duplicate content. You really don't have any elimination strategies largely out of the box. There are some that I'll go through in this presentation. It impacts user productivity because you have a mailbox limit. You actually need to, you know, the end user spends a, you know, 10, 15, maybe 20 or 30 minutes a week managing his mailbox, finding the content. So actually he's less productive for a year. And it, in essence, it really doesn't constrain the storage at all because you just kind of move the content under the radar. Also, there is a lot of legal and compliance problems with PSD files because, one, there is no centralized management. You can't find the content that easily. If you have a PSD files, you need to open them up individually, find the emails you're looking for, and if you have, you know, a couple of hundred or a couple of thousand PSD files, it becomes a very daunting task to find potentially the emails you're looking for. You can't dispose of the information. You can't set retention and says, hey, anything older than 5 years, get rid of it. You can't do that in PSD files. You can't do a risk analysis. Okay, do we have a problem or not? Because you have to individually open up all of those files. First of all, you have to find them, right? But then, second of all, you have to open them up, every single one of them, and do that search query, which is just not going to be a feasible solution. So, which made the lawyers really smart. In essence, they always look for ways to make people hurt finding the information there. Why did they target PSD files? Well, first of all, they might be the only record of information. Because you might have purged it from your backup tapes, you might have purged it from the Exchange server years ago, but one user somewhere had a copy of that email under the radar. So, PSD files are an enormous risk to your organization. They're very easy transportable format. It's probably the most common format that people use to, you know, leave your organization, to move to a competitor, take corporate IP and contracts and everything with them. And a lot of times then, because they are the only record of information, you know, they can, a lot of times these PSD files contain the smoking gun, and that's what you want to prevent. So the most requested, you know, record type in e-discovery is by far, it's not, you know, the financial statements, it's not audio files or digital images, it is email and attachment. A lot of, you know, about, you know, 8 out of 10 cases, they're looking for email. And they're looking for all email, not necessarily the stuff that's in the Exchange server, they're looking for the stuff that's in your backup tapes, regardless of where it's stored. And the content that they're looking for, most of the time, it's older than 36 months. So if you have mailbox limits, people probably ran into those limits a long time ago. So that content might no longer be on your Exchange server. That is somewhere else, whether it is in your backup tapes, whether it is in a PSD file. It's not necessarily, very likely, not in your production systems. It's somewhere else that you, what they're going to look for and what the lawyer's going to ask for. And that means that you're, if you don't have a way to centrally manage and find the information, you could be in potentially, deep trouble. So how do you preserve the information? What do you need to do? I can talk quite a bit about, you know, archiving, quite a bit on how to do the tactics of what you need to do, but it comes down to this. If you're thinking about preserving information, leverage an archiving solution in one way or another. Do not rely on your backup tapes. Your backup tapes are, in essence, a repository that you need for disaster recovery. It's not, you can't perform retention policies. You can't perform any kind of purging the information from the backup tapes. You just keep it forever as long as you have the tapes. And if you want to have long-term archiving, it could become very costly down there. So a backup is not an archive. You use an archive for maintaining information. You have a backup for recovery. Ensure you to capture all of the data you need. Partial is not going to help you out. Make sure that you have all the archive data from your mailboxes, but also have the data that's in the PSD files. Set the retention rules. Keep privacy rules in mind. In essence, if you're dealing potentially with foreign countries, Germany and France, for instance, have very strict privacy rules. Make sure that you keep those in mind with set policies. Use that archiving solution to help out with the storage management. In essence, the archive becomes the overflow bucket. So instead of a time, a size limit, you set a time limit where some people will have a little bit more data, some people will have a little bit less data. And, also because you don't have potentially a mailbox quota, people don't need to create a PSD file anymore because the archive takes care of that. So, but if you bring your content in, don't forget the PSD files, because a lot of the data, probably most of your messaging data in your environment, resides in PSD files. So there isn't, kind of going over the problem in a couple of slides, that, you know, it's my opinion that there are actually no good reasons to have a PST file in a corporate environment other than, you know, if, you know, maybe you want to hand over information to an opposing counsel or potentially do a migration scenario there. PST files are great for your home where you have a, you know, download the email from your provider there. But PST files have significant problems because, one, you cannot apply retention or legal hold to PST files. You can't do it. It's just not there. E-discovery requests are pretty much impossible to finalize it, to accomplish, because you need to know where all the files are on every edge device in your network and every file share, and you can't perform a broad search to find that because you're going to bring the network to its knees with that search and a copy action. You need to know that ahead of time. First of all, that's the search. The second of all, who do they belong to? Third, opening up and searching all the PST files, which is a daunting task. Maybe you have hundreds, maybe you have thousands of these files. This could be months' work to do, and you don't have that time. PST files, as I said before, are commonly used to when people leave an organization to work for a competitor. You can simply put them on your iPod or any other MP3 player you might have or on a thumb drive and walk out of the door with all the information that they ever send or receive. Pricing information, competitive sheets, contracts, contacts, anything that's out on there and what you send around to your corporate environment, someone could put it on a thumb drive and walk away. And you might have, you know, spend a fortune on data leak prevention at the edge, but if you have PST file open, it doesn't make sense because everybody can just leave with everything they want to. So it's an enormous risk for data leakage in your organization. They're very difficult to find, that search and e-discovery, because they could be in any location, any repository, any folder, any drive that it just attached to a drive. Very fragile, especially if you have a very large file, maybe an older file. When I talked about that 2 gig limit, get over the 2 gig limit, they get corrupt. And, you know, users are not really good at shutting their system down. A lot of them, you know, hard power them down. The PST file might be still open. They get easily corrupted there. They're not being backed up by end users on the local machines unless you maybe back up the machines yourself. So presumably you do have a server-based backup, but if they're on the local drives, a lot of times when the drive or the laptop crashes or lost or is stolen, the PST file is gone as well. Users do not compact them. They don't delete stuff from them. They only get bigger and bigger and bigger. And PST file password protection, users forget the passwords. You can hack the PST file passwords if you really need to, but can take a significant amount of time to do so. So if you lose that PST file password, you know, and you think about it, the e-discovery problem as well, and you might have a couple hundred PST files with a password, you might spend months just trying to get around that protection there. Single instance storage is lost. All of a sudden, now you might have that 5 meg PowerPoint hundreds of times in your environment, and it's crazy, in essence, if you want to do back them up and you tell your end users to store them on the network drive, it doesn't make sense. Why do you store them on your network drive when you might as well put them then in your file, in your Exchange server, leave them there? Is the disk space on the file server actually cheaper than you manage it on your Exchange server? And besides that, actually, Microsoft just doesn't support PST files on the file share because the obvious corruption problems you have. If you want to get offline access to your mail data, you can use OSD files. They are much better in performance. They are have an added security because they're actually a copy of what's in this mail server itself. So if you lose the OSD file because of a drive failure, it's not a problem. You can always get that back by simply replicating again with the Exchange server. PST files, as far as mail content sharing, you can only open them up on one machine at a time. You can't have multiple people get access to that mail data there. So team access wouldn't work. In that case, you would normally use a shared mailbox or something else to get access to the content. If you have a PST file, Outlook WebEx is not going to help you out because it can't see the PST file. You need to physically have a physical machine there. They're not secure. Anybody who has Outlook can open up a PST file. Again, you're dealing with data leakage, accidental information sharing, so you really don't want to have people be able to get access to content you should get access to. virus infestation is very problematic. Once the data is in down there, again, you have to manually open up, find the PST files. Not really a really easy way to deal with. So there's a lot of problems with PST files that you really don't want to deal with. And again, this is not even related to the storage footprint it might have in your environment there. It's just hidden storage is being eaten up by this all of this content. So let's go on to the good part. Now that we know it's bad, how do you actually get rid of them? It's out of the box, you have very limited, even with Exchange 2010, very limited tools available, functionality available to find PST files and bring that content back under control. So we're going over a kind of like a six-step process or a step process to how you deal with getting rid of PST files. And this is a process that I've been using myself very successfully in the past. And some things might sound obvious, but this is really the best way to get rid of it. And it's not going to be magical. You're going to have to spend some time on this to get rid of them. First of all, is write a project plan, even though it might be small, because you need to think about, and someone needs to make the decision, with what do you do about data from employees that have left the company? What do you do with the PST files? Are they on external drives? Are they on backups? Are they maybe on their old machines? Do you have them on a network share? What do you do with that data? Can you delete it or not? As an IT admin, this is not a decision that you should make. This is something from HR or legal or executive level that says, we need to keep this data or not. Who does get access to it? What are you going to do about password protection? What do you encounter? Are you going to ignore them? Are you going to try to hack them? What's the time limit you're going to spend on that? You need to think about the risks and actions, as it will save you time. Definitely will encounter these problems there. So, risks, what are the problems you potentially will run into? What are you going to do about it? What's the decision to be made? This is definitely, later on, when there might be potentially, if you get a legal action, it's like, well, you deleted these PST files. Why? And then you have that in the plan. This is the plan we followed. We followed it in good faith. We didn't destroy it maliciously. So you want to make sure that, follow this plan. Again, it can be just a couple of pages, but think about it. What are you going to do with people working remotely? Do you let them, are they, wait till they come in, you ask them to copy the files, things like that. You need to think about those potentially, issues that you will run into. Number two, prevent the growth of the problem. The further growth you have, you need to think about, okay, I know I have a problem, let's at least not let it get worse. There are actually now templates available for Office 2007 and 2010 as well. A lot of people are still on 2007. You can download this from that link, and it allows you to set group policies to configure specific functionality in Outlook. For instance, managing PST files. You can set a remove PST file creation, so new users that come in won't get the chance to create PST files anymore. So at least you don't let it get worse. Or you set the growth of PST files. You can maybe give a maximum size, or you set them to read-only. There's a lot of these policies that you can set. If you're in earlier versions of Outlook, you're going to be a little bit out of luck here. But for 2007 and later, you should use this, and actually then at the second step, prevent that problem from getting worse. Because you don't want to make sure that, you spend time and behind you, people are still creating files all over the place. Number three is discover all of the files. This is going to take some time. You need to find them everywhere in your network. If you run scripts, you can do this. Make sure that it doesn't run it all out at once, because it will saturate your network. Crawl specific machines at a time, so target groups or departments or floors or sections of people. Scan the drives, and you need to look at specific folders. There's some folders that you could probably safely exclude, the Windows folder, things like that. Probably the program files folder, so you can make that script to search a little bit smarter, but find out where they're located. It's not just the edge devices, not just your desktops and laptops. They could be located on servers, tapes, laptops, you know, external hard drives, workstations, things like that. You need to go through all of them and make sure that, you know, once you had them off that list, you know, don't let that problem get worse, but you got to find them. How do you deal with remote users as well? That's going to be an issue. Do you let these people come in? You ask them for instructions to, you know, to move the content over, things like that. But you have to find and go to, this is what a process where you have to do this meticulously. You have to go through every machine at a time and make sure that you scratch that off that list. Number four is bring that data into an archive. Why not Exchange? Well, you need to bring the content under centralized management. The reason for not bringing it into Exchange is that most likely you will not have the storage allocated on your Exchange servers for all of the PC file data. Remember that customer I talked about? They had more storage that was being occupied by PC files on, you know, all the Edge devices combined than it had in their entire data center allocated for storage. They had 300 terabytes of storage, more than all other storage combined. So you probably will not have the Exchange storage available to do and bring that content back in. Bring it into the archive. It's most likely already old content. Bring it so it doesn't make sense to make it, you know, highly available and start backing that up daily. Having it under centralized management allows you to set retention, do potentially e-discovery, risk management, things like that. So having it in an archive makes much more sense than trying to add, you know, tens or maybe hundreds of terabytes of storage to your Exchange server and all of a sudden have to back up that nightly as well. Number five really is give end users access to their content. If they had a reason to preserve the content because they think they needed it. End user need that content for productivity reasons. You don't know what's in it. It might be the last email that contained all the contract information, things like that. End users need to get access to the content. If you don't give them access, it's the quickest way for end users to start a revolt. Know where they can find their PSD file data. Retain the folder structure of the PSD file data, because a lot of users use, you know, very elaborate filing systems in their PSD file. So make sure that that is being preserved so they can still look at a PSD file in the same way as they used to do when it's truly was still a PSD file. Number six really is avoid creating stub files. Stub files are, you know, shortcuts in a mailbox containing to that archived item, because the reason why you don't want to do it because it can create major problems in Exchange with white space, fragmentation, IO overhead, and also you might run into the item count limits that, you know, really are responsible for what the end user perceives as far as performance. It's not the size of the mailbox, but it's the amount of items per folder. And so it doesn't make sense to, you know, bring in 300 terabytes of PSD files and create, you know, 500,000 or 1,000,000 stub files in several mailboxes. So you really don't want to do that. Number seven really is, once you brought the content in individually from end users, so once you crawled a machine, brought their PSD file in, disable the PSD creation policy. So make sure, you know, if you don't stop that, it's pretty much you're trying, end users will create a file again behind you. So once the PSD file is brought in from a machine, use those policies that I talked about earlier to restrict people, restrict employees from creating PSD files in the first place, no matter what machine they log on with. If you have earlier files, so let's say you use Outlook 2003 or earlier, you can set registry keys, but you have to set these keys on a individual computer basis there, so you can't set that easily, you know, through a GPO policy. But use those policies that you can download from Microsoft and use them to your, you know, to your advantage to block the creation moving forward. So, what to do about the PSD files? You want to be able to set retention and uses policies. Find the PSD files, how much do you have, lock them down through group policies. Then, if you're using Exchange 2010, you know, even though with the Exchange 2010 archiving functionality, and even though it has PSD file import capability, it still might not be all that, you know, that you really need. You might potentially need more than Exchange 2010 can provide you. Exchange 2010 requires you to pretty much have the PST file in a file share available, that you know which file, which exact file name, to what account it belongs to. Enterprises need potentially a business level archive that can crawl the network, identify PST files intelligently, so find a file, know the name, see who it belongs to automatically, and especially if you have a lot of files, like thousands of files out on there, that can save you a significant amount of time there. Lock down the PST files, and then through policy own the lifecycle. So really go through this process. Again, write that project plan and follow the process to eliminate it. One by one, one computer at a time. This is a project that might take months, potentially maybe a year or more to do if you have a lot of files. So don't try to rush it. Do it properly, and that makes sure that it's not going to, you know, pop its head up again in the future. Is it really that simple? Well, there's a couple of problems you will run into as far as discovery challenges, storage challenges, and end-user access challenges. From a discovery is like, you know, first of all, really, is that you probably aren't aware of, like, how big the problem is. You know, there are no native tools available from Microsoft out of the box to identify that. So either you're going to have to buy something, or you have to build it yourself to make scripts to find the information out down there. If you do build it yourself, you know, blunt force crawlers might cause problems there. You know, might cause problems with, you know, overloading that query, overloading a network with those searches all across the network. So if you do provide something, you got to make sure that it's a little bit more intelligent. From a storage perspective, you know, because you probably don't know the size of the problem, you probably don't even know, you don't know what, you know, how much data you really have out on there. Thing to realize, can your archive actually facilitate all of the data? Do you have the appropriate storage, or can your archive grow with the amount of data you bring in? Can you potentially add storage, add repositories to it? Think about the larger the indexes actually get, the slower the index is going to be. You know, your index roughly is going to be between 15% and 25% of the amount of data you ingest. Make sure you have adequate storage available for your index. Again, if you bring it in the archive, think about 25%. You know, that 300 terabytes of content might all of a sudden, you know, take up, you know, several terabytes of indexing, additional indexing space. You need to be prepared for bringing that. You know, storage challenges, how do you distinguish between private and business records if you're dealing with people in remote countries like France and Germany there? Plan for that, work with them. Are there ways for them potentially to do manually classification, you know, like, hey, we're going to bring that content in? Definitely a challenge, and there is no real silver bullet for that one. From an end user challenge, restricting PST files might create some you know, problems with people, because they think it's their right to be able to have a PST file. They want to be able to get access to the content transparently. They want to be able to continue to find their content. They have it saved for a reason. End-users are never going to delete the content. In my years, any mailbox limit is not going to make content magically disappear. You're going to have it no matter what. And the best way is to facilitate end-users so they can be as productive as possible, and, you know, not becoming part of the IT management infrastructure there to manage information. So from a takeaway perspective, really, number one, PC files really are too risky for any organization to have. They're great for home. You shouldn't have them in your business environment. It's just too risky, too much problems, will eat too much corruption. It's not enormous information risk, basically. Number two really is, plan your strategy to eliminate the files carefully. Write that project plan. Do it properly. If you do a half job, you might as well not done it at all, because you're going to have to redo it completely. Plan it, document it, work through the script one at a time, but do it well. Don't use the stub files, because it still could negatively impact your production environment there. Having mailbox limits really reduces use of productivity. This is something that end users are going to be very frustrated in the beginning. They're going to have to spend a significant amount of time dragging, dropping content from their mailbox into a PSD file. Set time limit policies. Hey, we're going to keep this stuff for 7 years. Some are going to use a little bit more storage, some are going to use less storage. Your end users are going to be way much more productive. In some situations, removing PSD file limits, I've seen some calculations, could actually add a full week work week as far as productivity to a year by just removing PSD file limits. So if you add that over, you know, hundreds of users, you could add man years of productivity to your organization. That's the impact of PSD files, or an impact of mailbox limits that a lot of organizations forget. Adding man years of extra productivity, you could buy a lot of drives for that and a lot of backup, you know, tapes for that, simply by, you know, enabling people to be more productive. And that's what a lot of people forget, is that the cost, the hidden cost of PSD files is so significant. You can buy a lot of drives by just what an end user loses in productivity a year. Take back that storage control by using an archive. You have the archive for an overflow limit. You can run it on cheaper disk. Don't have that mailbox limit in place. It's really a way that was a way that's the only way to manage the growth, but there are better ways to manage the content there. And, you know, number six, block the PSD file creation. Moving forward, new people coming in, make sure that they can create, you know, can no longer create PSD files, because it's going to give them, they have to be more intelligent. But if you do block PSD file creation, make sure that the content can go somewhere. Either give people very large mailboxes, which are technically possible with Exchange these days, or use an archive there. But if you don't block PSD file creation after you move the content in, or when new people come on board, the problem only is going to get worse there. So blocking PSD files using those GPO policies that you have will significantly help you out moving forward there. So there are some suggested resources. Microsoft's website, Exchange, actually has some content, or go to mimosasystems.com. And if you want to know more about, you know, information management, the SedonaConference.org has some significant information as well on records management, information management, and policies. And with that, I'd like to open it up for questions.